On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
And welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. It is football season is rapidly approaching. ACC media days are going on this week. UVA was up first, which is kind of a rare sight for Virginia. I usually feel like they're kind of towards the end of the week, but Virginia going on the first day, and Tony Elliott was down there, of course, accompanied by quarterback Chandler Morris, offensive lineman Noah Josie, defensive lineman Jameer Carter and Mitchell Melton, heavy on the trenches, heavy on experience. You look at all those guys, a lot of college football played in front of them. A lot of college football covered by Greg Medea from the Daily Progress. You like that transition. Greg,
smooth. You're a pro. The podcasting thing is really taking off for you.
How's it going down in Charlotte, coming to you from a not-so-undisclosed location?
Yeah, I'm at the Hilton. I'm at where the event is taking place. It's going good. I thought yesterday learned a little bit about Virginia. I mean, you know, cover the team as intensely all year long as I do. I think sometimes it can be hard at these events to find things that are different from what you've kind of felt going into the event. But this year, I walked away really encouraged. If you're a follower of Virginia, that this could be the year the offensive and defensive lines turn the corner for the Hoos. That was kind of my big takeaway walking out of Virginia's media sessions yesterday is Virginia feels confident in those groups, and that's a major change and a major difference really throughout Tony Elliott's tenure.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit, kind of touching more in depth on that topic, but some really good access for you down there just to talk to some of those guys and a different setting. And, one of the reasons you like it is because you can kind of get the whole conference there in one spot, talk to some different teams and stuff, and that's what you're going to be doing the rest of the time there. But we're going to focus on UVA today, some of the big headlines coming out about them. You know, there's not always a bunch of big headlines coming out of ACC Media Days. Like you said, we cover this team so, dedicated, throughout the year that, there's no real big surprises, come ACC Media Days, and especially with practice just around the corner, starting next week. That's crazy. Yeah, coming. But let's get into the headlines first. And I want to start with this kind of a bigger picture thing here. The pressure and expectations for this Virginia team. Our friend, colleague, David Teal from the Daily Pilot, he wrote an article, and I liked how he phrased something, and that's kind of how I'm going to frame this discussion. It was like, the time to win is now. They've done all this building. They've had all these years, finishing under 500. And it's kind of like, all right, put your money where your mouth is. You got this huge transfer class this offseason. You've got the facilities now. You've got, a veteran quarterback. You've got all this stuff. Can you actually put it together on the field? And just what were you gathering from talking to players, but also Tony, about, the pressure and the expectations going into year four?
I think they realize it. I mean, I don't think there's any sugarcoating it. And when you look at the makeup of the roster with how many older and experienced guys that they've had that have stayed, and then also that they've brought in through the transfer portal, like, they're not naive. They know what's going on. They've been in college football a long time. They know what year four means for a head football coach. And I think there's some responsibility. And I'd asked, do you feel pressure? I'd asked all four players who were here in Charlotte yesterday, do you feel pressure to win for Tony? And some of them said, you just want to make it happen for them. That they, especially the older guys, the players who've been in the program since the start of Tony Elliott's tenure, Noah Josie and Jameer Carter, they've been through everything that Elliott has been through since the coaching transition, and the tough seasons, of course, the tragedy, everything else that goes along with that's happened and occurred as Tony Elliott enters his fourth season. They want to make it happen, and they're tired of losing too, right? At some point, it's on the players, and there's some serious accountability. I thought when I talked to Josie one on one yesterday, he was just like the offensive line. It frankly just hasn't been good enough. I think his quote was, you know, it's really been a hindrance to the team. And he thinks if the O-line can get better, the win-loss ledger will change. You know, that's kind of his thought process. But they do feel even Chandler Morris, right? He's known Tony Elliott since he was a kid at Clemson, and watching Tony coach with his father. Like he said, you know, you just he's known Coach Elliott a long time, wants to do well for him. And he didn't say he feels the pressure of that, but he said that, you know, there's you want to make it happen for him.
Yeah, and he came. Tony came prepared with
Oh
some
yeah,
numbers yesterday. That whole opening monologue that he
kind
had.
of.
A huge credit to Scott Fitzgerald and the other people in the media relations department there at UVA, because I'm sure they helped get this stuff together. But so a couple of the ones that he said, I'll throw out here. One of six Power Four programs returning their entire staff.
Yeah.
Staff continuity has been big since that first year after they lost Marcus Hagans and Garrett Toujee. Then the other one is, you know, they brought in all these transfers. Their roster is very balanced now. 46% upperclassmen, 54% underclassmen. And he really likes that balance. Then we talked about the transfers, 850 games of experience added to the roster. And just look at the guys that you had there at Media Day. I mentioned this earlier, Chandler Morris going on his sixth season of college football, Jameer Carter on his sixth season of college football. Noah Josie, is this fifth or
Yeah, fifth year coming for
fifth
Noah.
for fifth for Josie? And then Melton is in his
Sixth year.
sixth year. Okay,
I'm
so
pretty sure. I'd have to look back, but I'm pretty sure.
at least
Just for a national
five.
championship.
Yeah, at least five for all of those guys.
Yeah.
It's a ton of experience. And that was kind of, you know, looking at who they brought there, I thought was really interesting. Just the amount of experience this team has added in the offseason. And that's, you know, something last year that they really lacked at times.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, especially at the positions of need, I'm talking O-line, D-line, corner. What did they go out and do through the portal? They went out and got guys who played football. There were very few like, I'm taking a chance on this kid who's been at a, you know, power program and really hasn't power four program really hasn't played a lot. There was more of this guy has proven production. Like, look at the O-line, right? McKeelan Thomas, 30 plus starts. Brady Wilson, 30 plus starts. Tyshawn Wyatt, 30 plus starts. The D line, like Mitchell Melton, just came off of winning a national championship. Now he wasn't a starter at Ohio State, but he played. He played as a rotational guy for the Buckeyes, and then the other defensive line players like Jacob Holmes from Fresno State. I think what 8.5 sacks over the last 2 years. There's some proven commodities there. Same with Fisher Kamak, the DN from UNLV. He was coming off the edge and really getting after the quarterback last year. Had that bowl game where what three sacks against Cal. So it really, really an impressive way to go about it. It was all about proven production and games played. I think that should matter at least at those key positions. Same thing with corner. All those guys are old experienced corners.
The thing with the pressure and expectations, it's kind of been an interesting wave that I've seen kind of this offseason. Go back to Virginia Tech, obviously, things were very down at that point. And that was before, you know, they get this, you know, big NIL donation, and then they go on a tear in the transfer portal in the winter. Things are kind of rising up throughout the spring, and you know, we get through this, you know, the spring portal, they add some more guys, and then like the summer has kind of set in. And I've seen fans and national media alike just kind of go like back down on expectations for Virginia. And like, I'm interested to see, you know, where the, you know, the media poll ends up with Virginia, you know, kind of next week when we see that those results. Just because it seems like the expectations have gone back down for Virginia. You saw like a little bit in the spring, they were like, I don't know, this could be like a dark horse team in the ACC. Look at the schedule. And now everyone's like, I know the schedule's easy, but like Virginia, you know, they'll find a way to mess it up or something like that. And it's just interesting riding the wave of emotions going through the off season. But it seems like Elliott kind of came out with a clear message. Like, they feel very confident. I think what was the line? They've assembled the deepest and most complete roster that they've had in 4 seasons. I think that's pretty clear for
No
us
doubt.
watching this
No
team,
doubt.
what they've been through the last 4 years.
Well, and like going back to January or December, right? It was December when they got the big donation, and folks telling me behind the scenes they're going after good players, right? There's no financial excuse. There's no dipping your toe into the portal and trying to pull a guy from the D2 or FCS levels and making it work. They have some of that, but the bulk of newcomers and acquisition are proven power conference players, and that's encouraging for Virginia. It's a change kind of from what's been at UVA in their transfer portal approach, I guess I could say, and resources too. All right, they had more resources. They could go out and pay players, and that's what's so fascinating, right? It seems like they're all in on this season. They know they have to go good this year, or it's going to be too late. So to me, I think the expectation should be to at least get to a bowl game. When you have 7 home games, that's a positive. What they're home the first for the first 5 weeks of the year, you have a runway to have a potential good start, just like you did last year. You just got to finish better, and maybe more depth helps in that department.
Let's go to your first story from yesterday. You got a one-on-one with Tony Elliott, and he talked about Chandler Morris is the number one quarterback going into fall camp. It's something that we haven't seen at UVA in a while since my first
Brennan.
guest this week, Brennan Armstrong, was the quarterback going into that first season, and that one was obvious. I mean, the guy was coming off a record-setting season at UVA. You have to start him, but the second year under Tony Elliott, it was Tony Musket and Anthony Calandra in camp, and it was like, well, come on, like we know Tony Musket's going to be the starting quarterback, like that's kind of what this is built up to. And then the next year, it was like, all right, we know Anthony Calandra is going to be the starting quarterback, but you kind of like they've dragged this along. This year, he didn't want to drag it along. Chandler Morris is QB1.
Yeah, I think what he told me was fascinating, and I think spot on in terms of where the program is at. He goes, with all these transfers, you needed a direction, right? You have to have the team rally around a quarterback and know who the guy is going to be. That was part of the decision. Of course, Chandler earned a job too in spring, right? He wasn't just going to be handed the job, but because it was clear cut, why not have that decision made? Why not go into camp knowing who's the guy, who's going to get the bulk of the first team reps? And then your team can start to run through practice and go through everything it needs to go through in August instead of juggling two guys, right? Just give the guy who's going to be the guy the reps and move forward. So I think that's important. I'm sure it's just the right move all around when you know who the guy is going to be. If there was a true battle, you got to let it play out. But there wasn't going to be a true battle. Everyone knew, even when Morris decided to come to Virginia, it was obvious from talking to folks that he was going to be the number one guy. The decision is made now as to who's heading to camp.
And it was, both looked very good in the spring. I think they both came away really impressed. And Daniel Kalen, like, obviously, he's a younger guy, so he's a lot of the future there. But yeah, Chandler Morris just looked like he came in with the control and just a composure. And it kind of showed on ACC Media Day, too. Like, I was very impressed with the interviews that he does. And we talked to him in the spring as well, and he came off really well in those too. He kind of comes off with this confidence, and I think that's something that's interesting for this team going forward. Is we always we go back to that story that we heard back in the spring. Like, he came in that first day and he's like, I didn't come from Texas, to go five, to win, go 6-6. I came here to win championships. Like, he said that in front of everyone in the room. Like, he wants that to be known, and that's the expectation that I feel like his confidence kind of instills in this team.
Yeah, he's coming off the Manning Passing Academy too, and being around all those great quarterbacks. So there's some confidence coming off of that. He said it's a nice springboard into training camp, and as you get ready for a season. He said he was able to talk with both Peyton and Eli Manning, and then also John Gruden was there, and he said he really liked talking to John Gruden and picked up a few things, and how important it is to stay out of second and nine and third and long, and how to always take what the defense gives you. There was a lot there that I thought was fascinating. He said, in my conversation with Chandler one-on-one, we talked about what he likes to do as a quarterback, and he said he really likes to distribute the football around to a number of different receivers. He said, go look at my stats from the past few years and see how the distribution breaks down. He goes, you're not going to find one dominant guy. He's like, I like to get everyone involved. A lot of it is trying to take what the defense allows for. So I think that's really interesting too. He's going to, he's the son of a coach. He has that kind of embedded in him to be smart with the football and take what's there. And I think it's, reinforced by Gruden a little bit, at the Manning Passing Academy, picking the brain of some of the other quarterbacks there. And I think he's in a very good place after coming off a great year too at North Texas, right? 31 touchdown passes, I think, top of my
That
head.
ballpark, yeah.
It was top five in the country, through the regular season. I think only Cam Ward and a couple other guys had more touchdown passes than Chandler Morris. So I think he's older experience. It's kind of what Virginia has lacked at that position the last few years since Brennan's final season. All right, Mo Muscat was a transfer coming up from the FCS level. Calandria was, young, and then Morris. I know he had the great year at North Texas, but he's also been at Oklahoma. He's also been at TCU. He's been places where they know how to win football games, and I think that's important.
I like what you said there too about spreading the ball out, because I think when you look at, we've talked about this receiving core too, like there's not that one traditional dominant guy like there has been in the past. I think there's guys that we expect to really make some big strides this year, Terrell Harris being one of them now that he's healthy, knock on wood. Jamal Edgerrin has also been a guy it seems like he's got a lot of chemistry with, and there's kind of just a bunch of other guys that can kind of contribute there. I saw he mentioned Cam Ross is another one that's really stood out to him as well. But that's interesting because there's a lot of good skill players out there, but maybe not the one dominant like star skill player out there. So I think that's it sets up well for him to distribute and find a lot of different avenues in this offense. Speaking of which, I'm sure Greg, because you always know, but the summer workouts this year a little bit different. There's been some rule changes that they can have some more structured workouts. Usually it's been just the strength and conditioning staff throughout the summer. But this lets them, the coaches, get on the field with them, kind of do some install now that you have what's the number 52 new 54 new players coming in this offseason. They needed that, but I think it was six structured workouts that they got.
Yeah, I think Morris, he said it really well. Going into training camp, excuse me, he's like through the spring, through the summer. In the spring, he said he wasn't quite confident in his grasp of Virginia's protections and how it functions. He said after the spring and through the summer, he's got a much better grasp of that and totally understands how Virginia's protections function. I think it helps accelerate maybe the learning curve for some of the new players. And he's a smart guy. He's going to be able to put things together at some point. But the fact you could do it in June or July instead of August is probably a positive for the sport really as a whole. Right. It's not just Virginia, right? Everybody's getting to take advantage of these things. And maybe you'll see some cleaner football because sometimes week one, as much as everybody's excited about it can be a little bit of a work in progress and a mess for some teams when you're introducing so many new players and game action for the first time. So I think that's positive. I think too, you throw it with the strength and conditioning workouts, it's just more time those players and coaches get to spend together. And you start to, I think Tony said he feels like the team is already pretty tight-knit, and that's even with bringing more players in. So I think that's a good thing too.
Yeah, it just seems like it's something that in this day and age in college football and everything, like it's something that you gotta have because, and I never understood really why we have to take all this time off. I guess because, we're still living in the delusion that it's, purely student athletes. But yeah, I think like they're already there. They're going through workouts. Why not just let them, kind of go through some light, install stuff, like, just learning the offense, learning the defense, learning all this stuff that they're going to have to know.
Especially if you're going to continue to have spring transfers, right? If that's going to go away for some reason, they're going to go to one portal window at some point in a year. Like maybe then you can fit, you don't have to do that, but if you're going to have a spring transfer portal window, you got to give the guy something in summer before they get into training camp.
Yeah, you're just completely behind the eight ball, especially like some of these guys, you know, now they'll go transfer to one school for the
Spring.
spring, and then they're transferring again. And so they're really behind the eight ball because they just tried to learn this whole other system. And now they got to learn a whole new one wherever their next stop is. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We got a couple more topics to touch on when we get back from ACC Media Day. So stay tuned here on the Who's On podcast.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. We are talking and recapping ACC Media Days for Virginia. There was a big emphasis, Greg, and I know you picked up on it because you wrote about it for the Daily Progress on the trenches. And that's kind of been a big theme since going back to the winter portal. You know, we've seen the guys that they picked up in the portal and the offensive and defensive lines. But I think that a lot of the confidence that we talked about that this team has, the staff has a lot to do with the guys that they picked up on the offensive and defensive lines.
Yeah, and nothing is more clear than the numbers Elliott gave me. He thought going into this training camp, they have 10 to 12 offensive linemen that they feel good about, six defensive ends they feel good about, and six defensive tackles they feel good about. He said the past few years on the D line, they probably felt good about 2 to 2.5 defensive ends and 2 to 2.5 defensive tackles to get to five total. Noah Josie told me in past August training camps, there was so much worry about losing a guy to an injury in training camp because he knew the four or five, the five starters, maybe a sixth guy, they had to get to the season with those guys. He goes, not that you're okay with guys getting hurt this time, but he goes, you can actually go out there and practice hard because you don't have to be worried about getting hurt. And I think that those couple of thoughts from Elliott and Josie were pretty convincing to me because it just hasn't been there. And you look at the season sometimes and how it goes. Like the past couple of years, 2 years ago, I guess, Cam Butler fought an injury, Chico Bennett fought through injury, and that defensive line was not right. On the offensive line in years, last year, right, they lose Brian Stevens for a game due to sickness, and the whole thing is a mess. It's very, very difficult. And I think, going into this year on the O-line, they'll have 10 guys or 11 guys, excuse me, who have started at least one college football game. They'll have five who have started 20 or more college football games. And they bring in guys who have started games in the Big Ten. They brought in a guy who started in David Wallabaugh in the ACC and the SEC. Wigginton's the kid who started in the Big Ten at Michigan State and then moved to Illinois. McKeelan Thomas was an all Sun Belt player. They've brought in proven entities, and I think that's where the confidence starts to come from. Josie said, when you're playing with that many experienced players on the O-line, you can teach somebody something once and they can just go. You can stop and do something once and you can just go. He goes, in years past, it's not been like that. And I think his realization of where the O-line has been to where it's gone now, he's very excited. The team is excited. And I think, if Virginia can get its O-line right, a lot will maybe start to work itself out with that offense.
Yeah, to me, throughout Tony Elliott's entire tenure, there's been a lot of talk about, stuff on the surface level, the offense, what it's looking like, quarterback situation. But the consistent underflow going through this whole thing has been the offensive line. And It was so big that first window. And I know Tony's shared some regret about kind of, the guys that left in that first window, because they had a very veteran offensive line. A lot of those guys left. I know Oluwatimi, he was gone out the door before like he really even got a shot. He was off to Michigan, and good for him because he had a great career at
Oh,
Michigan.
yeah.
But looking at like they never really recovered, and they've been kind of playing catch up on the offensive line ever since. And they went heavy on the high school, high school guys to kind of build up the offensive line. But it really seems like they honed in on the transfers now, and to try to help kind of stabilize things. And I know they got some high school guys that are still coming up through the system that they like, but the transfers I feel like have really helped stabilize that whole offensive line situation, giving them some good players too.
Yeah, I think it doesn't hurt also. And Tony said he really couldn't speak to this when I asked him about it, just because he doesn't know all the other rosters. But like, you look around the ACC, like SMU has had successful offensive lines built through the transfer portal. Louisville, same thing. They bring in a horde of new offensive linemen each and every year, at least since Jeff Brohm's been there. So it's been done that way a couple of times now, a few different places. I think it was Terry Heffernan who mentioned that back in the spring about noticing what some of the other schools in the conference have done, ways to build an offensive line. And Tony said, for this Virginia team, it had to be done this way. If they were going to get good this year, that's the way it had to go, because they needed more experience. They needed more proven players on the front. So that's the route they decided to take. And I think you couple that too with like how challenging it is to develop and find and identify high schoolers that'll project. And he said it's been tough. He said that's been very, very difficult to do at UVA, and something that has to get better. But for this year, it's about the transfer guys.
I think it was not a mistake that, three of the four guys that were there at ACC Media Day are in the trenches, veteran guys in there. Noah Josey on the offensive line, Jameer Carter, Mitchell Melton on the defensive side. Melton's a guy we haven't gotten to really know a lot yet. Just from getting to see him there at ACC Media Days, was interesting, and kind of speaks to, the role that he'll play this year. Obviously, they don't bring these guys by mistake. What do you think overall about the defensive line? We talked a lot about the offensive line, and that's obviously been a big thing, but the defensive line, I mean, gosh, I think Tony said, between like 13, 14 guys, in contention to play on that defensive line right now, between defensive tackles and defensive ends.
Yeah, they're high on Melton. Yeah, he looks the part. He looks like a player, and that can come off the edge and get to the quarterback. He kind of described his game as basketball on grass. I don't know exactly what that means, but that's what he told me his style is with his pass rush. He said he's really excited to play for Rudzinski. He thought, his mentality matched up with Rudzinski's mentality. And that, he was looking for a little bit more opportunity, right? At Ohio State, if Virginia's got 12 this year, Ohio State's probably got 20 defensive linemen that can play.
And a few first round draft picks at the
Yeah,
top of that.
and he contributed last year. Like, don't overlook that he did contribute, had a couple of sacks last season for the Buckeyes. I think one against Michigan State. And I just think he wanted a little more chance to show what he can do. He said, it's interesting when you win a national championship. He's like, yeah, I didn't expect it, but you do have some instant credibility when you walk in a locker room. He said, then it's like towing the fine line between, showing how that work ethic that you've learned, and he played a really good high school program too, at Good Counsel in Maryland, showing like what he's learned in his career at successful places, and helping fit in with the culture at UVA. So I think it's I think he'll be a very good addition. A couple other defensive linemen I think that will really be good this season, Fisher Kamax in that mention. And then on the interior, Tony mentioned to me he really thinks Sichan John, the freshman, has a chance to be good. He goes, he came in and just wowed us in the spring. Just had an absolutely great spring. Now, I don't know if that means he's going to play, but he's at least got the attention of the coaching staff.
Yeah, That, I mean, that's wild, you know, a freshman coming in with the kind of depth and verse, you know, and veteran guys that you have in that room. Jameer Carter, who was there, is obviously back.
Yeah. He's
Jason
gonna,
Hammond coming off the injury. Anthony Britton, who got a lot of really good playing time and really grew over the course of last season. You mentioned Jacob Holmes earlier. Hunter Osborne is another guy who's made some big strides in the weight room this summer. So it's crazy that you know, a freshman is kind of getting those mentions early on there.
Yeah, and like I said, you know,
We'll
UVA's
see.
got three defensive tackles who've played for them in Carter, Britton, and Hammond. Hunter Osborne was a big time transfer addition from Alabama. And then Jacob Holmes, like I said, 8.5 sacks over the last 2 years coming in from Fresno. I think they're gonna roll those guys and rotate them as long as they're up to snuff, basically, and can be good contributors. I think they'll rotate and play as many as they can. And then you look at what Carter told me yesterday. He's like, when you're fresher at the end of a game, there's just so much more you can do. He goes, even if it's, you know, 10 to 15 snaps less than I usually play, it'll make a difference.
Well, one of the stats Tony quoted was, you know, they had a lead in 9 of their 12 games, and it's, you know, trying to figure out how can you know,
You close it. Yeah.
close out the game, and depth is a huge part of that. Some other bigger ACC things, because obviously Jim Phillips, ACC commissioner, had his press conference at the beginning of the day. The one that I think we are looking forward to the most is the availability reporting. You know, for foot, I'll go over real quickly. Football, it's they will have an injury report or availability report 2 days before each conference game. So just an example, Thursday before a Saturday game. Updates on game day as well. Then basketball and baseball included as well, day before each conference game and then a day of game. And yeah, they kind of have the injury designations available, probable, questionable, or outs. They won't say what the injuries are or what the, you know, absence is, because, you know, sometimes it could be something else, academic or whatever. What do you think of this? I mean, this is something that a lot of other conferences have adopted, especially because of the gambling
Yeah.
culture that we're in now.
I think it's necessary. I think just do it, get it out of the way. I think it's probably might even be better. I know coaches don't like to give away who'll be on the field and who won't, but they don't necessarily have to give the injury away now. You know, you know, it felt like, you know, when you ask a coach what's going on with so and so's knee, it's like the cat's out of the bag, the knee's bad, you know. With this, if something happens behind the scenes, you know, there's a chance you never find out about what exactly the injury is. So that's interesting. I think it's a good thing. You know, just let everybody know who's gonna play, who won't play. I'm all for
Yeah. I was surprised baseball got included in there. You know, we always
yeah.
talk about football and basketball, but
Just
baseball gets.
because of how many games there are. It's like
Yeah.
that's gonna take up some time for coaches and medical staff, right? Of like, you know, when you got a 3-game series, are you just gonna do it for the series? Are you gonna do it for every game, you know?
Yeah. The other announcement from Jim Phillips was about the, I guess, quotes, event security plans, basically court and field storming rules of stuff for men's basketball, women's basketball, and football. You know, I think basically, you know, they have to wait until the visiting team leaves the playing field. And you know, fines for this go from first occurrence 50,000 to 100K for the second, and then 200K for the third. I know a lot of Clemson fans were really worried about you know, their you know,
Post
tr
game.
meet at the paw, but that will be allowed as soon as the visiting team is off the field. I get, you know, it's kind of felt like they've needed to do something, especially because, you know, I know Duke fans have great, you know, have raised a lot of noise in recent years after the Filipowski incident down at Wake Forest and, you know, some other stuff. But yeah, it seems like pretty common sense.
Yeah, this is easy. I think this is. You know, is it less fun? Maybe, but you can't have opposing visiting teams getting hurt when
Yeah.
you storm the field. You just can't have that. I mean, that would be the worst way to lose somebody to an injury, right? Now, how upset would coaches and the players be if something like that happened?
The only time I got hurt in a field storming was at Scott Stadium. when Virginia Tech fans rushed the field after beating Virginia on their home field. I don't know how the fines work for that. That's a little bit of a gray area, and I'm sorry I'm bringing up a sore spot for some Virginia fans right now when that happened a couple years ago, but yeah, it's I think I've been in a couple throughout my years, court storming wise, JMU when they beat
Yeah.
Virginia, that was one. A couple with Virginia, when they beat Virginia Tech, and then when they beat Florida State, they rushed the field both of those times. But just interesting stuff. Anything else that's kind of stood out to you about your time down there in Charlotte?
No, so far, kind of what you'd expect. I think the move to nine, potentially move to nine ACC league football games would be fascinating. I think they'd almost have to do it if the SEC decides to do it, right? You don't want to be the only power conference not at nine games. So I think that's something to watch for as things continue to churn and everybody figures out the college football playoff and that potential format of what it could
But
be, playoff expansion.
with the nine games though, do you only schedule FCS opponents like Indiana, or do you try
I
to
think
mix
he
it up?
him I that's
That's
a
your
good
guy
question.
right there, Kurt Cignetti.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think he's probably just trying to ensure Indiana can get in the playoffs, right? I mean,
Yeah, it's
that's the biggest thing. And you add a home game when you do that. There are a lot of dynamic and components to it. I think that the early if there was some kind of standardized scheduling, it would be positive.
And that was a lot of what his points were yesterday. I think it kind of got lost, with Virginia fans saying, "Oh, you cancel the series because you're scared or something." I think really it's, why take the risk at that point if if these wins are going to count the same as these wins, there's no standardized scheduling across the sport, why do it? And I totally agree. And I think, for Virginia's case, it doesn't, I broke the news to Brennan Armstrong on the podcast earlier this week that the NC State game was a non-conference game, and he was like very confused by that. And I think a lot of people are, and we'll probably have to remind a few more once we get
Oh,
there
yeah.
in week two. But yeah, I mean, Virginia's basically playing nine conference games already this year.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is I think because both schools kind of needed something, and
Yeah.
it was an easy way to do it, and they hadn't played in, to miss the team on the schedule this many years in a row. It's like,
I know.
all right, you might as well play. But it's a good question. It's a good question, but
Yeah.
it'd be interesting to see what it means going forward.
Yeah, I'm interested to see kind of what the scheduling looks like with the ACC, what they kind of come up with over the next year. I don't know if you filled out your ballot yet. Do you have a top four in the ACC in your head?
Yeah, I do have a top four in my head. I've been doing a lot of research for my top 25 vote,
Yeah, that's coming up
so
too. Yeah.
that's coming up. So I got to get that in. Clemson is the class of the league this
For
year.
sure.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I'm teetering between kind of three teams for second: SMU, Georgia Tech, and Miami. I think you look at those four. I think those are kind of like the four teams that are better than everybody else in the league. I think a lot of people are sleeping on Georgia Tech,
Yeah.
what they returned. They're here today in Charlotte. It'd be interesting to hear Haynes King and Brent Key and that crew. I think they're going to be better. SMU, you get the target on your back a little bit more this year, right? Everybody knows you're coming, and I think the schedule's a little tougher. They've got Baylor and TCU in a non-conference. They play Clemson on the road, so it's a little bit more tricky for the Ponies heading into 2025 schedule-wise. With Clemson though, with Klubnik and all those defensive linemen, like this feels a lot like a vintage Dabo Swinney team.
Yeah.
Just to me, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're preseason number one or number two in the country.
They should be. They
Yeah.
return a lot of talent. The offensive tackles too,
Yeah. Oh.
shouldn't be overlooked. Like if you can return talent like that, Louisville is another one that
Yeah.
I would have put up there in the top four. I think that, we saw Isaac Brown last year. That kid is special as a running back. If he's not on your first team ballot, not talking to you, but if talking to anyone putting
Yeah.
a ballot out there, like he needs to be there.
I bumped into Greg Brohm, Jeff's brother, in the elevator. earlier this morning, and we were talking a little bit. I'm like, man, that Isaac Brown, and he's like, yeah, he's pretty good. So it's interesting. It was also fascinating yesterday, just to throw a couple other things at you, seeing Andrew Luck and Ron Rivera
Oh my
bouncing off
gosh.
Charlotte yesterday. Frank Reich too, right? You see him on you're so used to seeing him in an NFL background, and then to see him here in Charlotte was unique. That's interesting. I think with what happens to California schools, can they take a step forward, or is it going to be another work in progress? It seems like Justin Wilcox might be on a hot seat a little bit.
Yeah.
And then Stanford, it's like, who knows what you might get this season.
I know that the Stanford situation is kind of wild all over. I think Cal and Stanford are, two of the favorites right now to be, in that 15, 16, 17 range on a lot of people's ballots. It is wild though, in the year 2025 to see Andrew Luck walking around ACC Media Days. I don't think anyone could have predicted that, much less last year or, 10 years ago. I'm interested by this ACC this year. I think there's a lot of there's some talk. I saw comments from Rhett Lashley talking about the SEC and how top heavy they are, and it's not a conference a lot of depth. I think that can be argued, but it's an interesting time for the ACC, and we'll see kind of how the season goes.
I think week one's important too.
Yeah,
Some plays
that
LSU.
Clemson LSU game might be the biggest game of the year for the ACC, just as a
Bama goes to
statement.
Florida State. I don't know how much better Florida State will be, but like there's an opportunity there at least.
Sure.
And then Miami hosts Notre Dame week one. Like the
Yeah, that's
schedule,
big.
there's a lot on the line there for the ACC in week one. I think what South Carolina, Virginia Tech play, Tennessee and who does Tennessee? Syracuse. Tennessee plays Syracuse. And like those are some opportunities. And Jim Phillips said yesterday, he's like, at some point, you got to win. You got to win those games. You can't keep, kicking yourself in the foot in those big time opportunities.
Yeah, you got to take advantage of the non-conference, and especially so many people make their opinions for the whole season based off week one and kind of the early parts of the season.
Oh,
So
yeah.
you've got to come out and make a statement if you're the ACC, and that's why I think the Clemson LSU, because I think that's the two most evenly matched teams.
100%.
I do think Alabama is not the Nick Saban Alabama, so there's a little bit of opportunity. They can be got on the right day, as Vanderbilt showed. But yeah, I'm a little wait and see on this Florida State team right now. I think they're up today as well.
Yeah, they're up
Thomas
today.
Castellanos.
They're in the breakout room in about 10 minutes. So I think I'm gonna head down here once we get off.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap it up there. Greg, thanks for hopping on. I know we got practice starting next week. We are in football season now. I hope you enjoyed your summer because it's over.
My summer, my 2.5 week summer
Yeah,
after hitting the
you're
football.
2 weeks with baseball and everything.
Yeah.
All
All right,
right.
Justin, thanks for having
All
me.
right, that'll do it for the Who's On podcast. We will be back next week with more. We've got head baseball coach for the Virginia baseball team, Chris Pollard, coming up on the podcast next week. So we will talk to you then.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.